All right, decisions. Yep, you made the decision to listen to the show today, and it's going to be a good decision, all right? And I'm really, really happy to be here today. We have a show that's going to be dedicated to one question, and that is all the hell that's going on right now, all the stuff that's actually in an uproar right now around the Trump regime, around fascism, around the need to stand up against that. That's what the subject is going to be. And basically, well, let me do a little intro here, because refused fascism, people are familiar with it to a certain extent. It's a movement of people coming from diverse perspectives, united in their recognition that the Trump-Pence regime poses a catastrophic danger to humanity and the planet, and that it's our responsibility to drive them from power. And now our guest today is Andy Z, and Andy's a co-initiator of Refuse Fascism and a spokesperson for Revolution Books. He's also a revolutionary and an advocate for the new communism developed by Bob Avakian. Now, at the end of the show, not at the end of the show, but midway through the show, we're going to have listeners' questions. Now, this show is pre-recorded, so unfortunately, you will not be able to call the station and ask a question. But as always, I welcome questions and comments on my Facebook page or by email. So, Andy Z, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you.
Good. All right, Andy, we want to talk with you today because of basically everything that's going on, you know, and the fact that Trump, you know, this whole point about Trump unhinged, his whole regime is a danger to humanity. Millions of people are feeling this, but there's still some very big questions posed, and especially will people act to stop it and how? And this is the time that we really need to be standing up and dealing with all this. So let me ask you the first question, all right? Which is, refuse fascism has called for actions all week long in a number of cities around the country. And you made the point that this is a critically important moment for humanity. It's one defined by dangerous and unprecedented moves by Trump and his fascist regime. And millions of people are agonizing over that. Let's talk about that. Because I think it gives people a sense, a sort of a place where they can actually see the overall picture. So why don't we talk about what you meant by that?
Okay, well, Michael, and your audience, let's get into it a bit. You know, over the past, since January 2017, it's just literally every week there's been one outrage after another. And over time, people have increasingly seen what this regime is doing, not just Trump, but the whole regime, all the people he brought in, the people backing him, the fact that the Republican Party has been largely become a fascist party in its program, even as that's been something that's been happening over decades, but it's coalesced around Trump. And people feel this very deeply, and they have for some time. I mean, just if you look at the environment and the day after day unraveling and taking apart measure after measure, now we're about to have a Supreme Court justice who would do a number of things, including, you know, essentially raise the executive branch, the presidency, as immune from any responsibility to the law, overturning things like the decisions around LGBTQ rights, right to abortion, right to birth control, the status of women, right down the line. People have been very concerned about us over time, but they've also gotten used to it. Why Refuse Fascism called for protests this week is because the last week to 10 days has been extraordinary, even by Trumpian and Pencean standards. And what was unusual about it is that the tremendous divide in the ruling class, if you will, has burst forth in some new ways. And it began with Senator McCain's funeral, which he planned himself, where you saw something that was extraordinary, unprecedented in a certain way, where you had the two presidents speaking at that funeral, presidents who disagreed very vehemently with each other on many, many issues, and including some fundamental things about policy, George W. Bush and then his successor, Barack Obama, both from their own perspectives, raising the signal about the danger that the Trump regime and program represents from their perspective. And then this was followed and coincident with the publication or the announcement of the publication now published of Bob Woodward's book, Fear, which is yet another expose of what people have already known, but he brings it out with some interviews of the absolute chaos in the White House and the fact that the man is, you know, a narcissistic lunatic, and that even people within his administration have done things like steal papers from his desk. And then this was corroborated then by an anonymous op-ed in the New York Times by somebody purportedly or represents themselves as part of the high-level person in the administration who said that he, who agrees with a good deal of the Trump-Pence program, nonetheless is with others working to protect the country against Trump's worst impulses. And all of this, and then, of course, this all happens against the backdrop of the Senate hearings to confirm who is none other than one of the most fascist judges we'll have on the court, Justice, soon to be potentially, unless we stop it, Justice Kavanaugh. And the hearings where over 200 people got arrested and there were mass protests, but yet and still no serious opposition at this point where it's going to actually be stopped. So all this is put in front of people. Once again, the question of why, I think as I put it in that article, is why is this person still in power in this country? Why have we allowed this to happen? Since when is it okay to have an avowed white supremacist who openly supports Nazis and KKK people in the White House? Yes, there's a whole history of this in this country, from Woodrow Wilson all the way back to the very beginning of the country, a country founded on with slaveholders. But this is an extraordinary thing, and yet and still people are going along in the normal processes. So this is why, part of why Refuse Fascism is in the call for these protests, where millions of people are feeling this very, very deeply. But if I can go on a little bit more, Michael, is that
sure,
okay?
Sure, yeah, definitely, man.
Yeah, because I think we have to get into some depth around this. I think we have to pull the lens back even further and take a look at what we are seeing, you know, in a broad sweep of things. And I'm very interested, just take a little aside for a second, in the protests and that took place up in the Bay Area in San Francisco, I think specifically around the environment, where I think you can see on almost every major question, whether it's the threat of war, the threat of the environment, the position of women here and around the world, that what you're seeing is that the system is straining against the limits of its own workings, which is workings of exploitation and oppression. It's just mad how things are in this system right now. And I'm drawing this from a talk that was given by Bob Avakian last year that's available online, The Trump-Pence Regime Must Go. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. A better world is possible. Avakian gave this speech, and it's available for people to watch it online at revcom.us. And I really recommend it because he goes back to the long and the short story of what gave rise to this, which is the whole history of humanity has led to a system that's based on exploitation and oppression, and yet it's up against its limitations. And he brings this out in a very living way, which I'm not going to try to recapitulate right now, but that the strains against this system has given rise to a development and a moment when there are no radical revolutionary alternatives in the world, where you see these fascist, nationalist, white supremacist movements spreading throughout Europe and the United States, and a different form of Islamic fundamentalism, a different form of fascism spreading throughout other parts of the world. And then at the same time, you have an American, and the peculiar and particular history of America founded on the genocide of the native peoples and the theft of the native land and the white supremacy that underlied the foundation of America in chattel slavery that then continued in the Jim Crow era, and also was that wealth was increased through successive waves of super exploited immigrants leading up to today, where the question of immigrants is front and center again, the exploitation of their people in their countries and then being driven here and being exploited here. So all of this has taken a certain shape in the development of a fascist strain that's come to political power with the Trump-Pence regime. That is the situation we face right now. And this fascist stream was remaking the rules by which this empire carries out its oppression against the people. And you're seeing here that, and you've seen this for the last year and a half, that they have to attack not only the people, which is who they fundamentally attack through their policies, and as well as the racist rhetoric of Trump and his people, but also they attack the Democrats, the people who are in opposition, who stand in their way in the ruling class, the Republicans who have opposed them, who mainly are resigning from Congress or, in McCain's case, have died. And so that what you have seen in the last week is a very sharp division at the top of society between the two factions of, if you will, the ruling class, the people who have administered this state in the interests of the system itself. And that class should tell us two things. One, how serious this redirection of American society is. Yes, within the framework of an oppressive system, but how serious this divide is. And second, it should tell us, when you look at the opposition of the Democrats, and you analyze it not as you would like it to be or as people may wish it to be, but as it actually is, that all of the resistance they're putting up is well within the confines of the system, and that they will only ultimately lead people, as they are, back into the system through, at this point, the midterms. And then they'll be right into the presidential election and into terms that will not actually redress this. Refuse fascism is saying, whether you believe in what I'm saying, which is that these problems reside in the system itself, or you believe that capitalism and this system and American democracy could actually be a force for good in the world, everybody has to recognize and can easily recognize that what the Trump-Pence regime is bringing would be disastrous for humanity, and that we need to act against that and to stop that and to drive them from power. But that can only happen if the people themselves take action outside the confines of the political process through what we're calling for, which is sustained, nonviolent, mass protests, protests that stay in the streets in the major cities and small towns of this country, day after day, night after night, millions strong ultimately, and create the kind of political crisis where those who are in the in the ruling class, if you will, or in Congress, powers that be, whatever word you want to use, who do oppose this, then will oppose this in a way to drive the regime out. And there's plenty of reason from all the scandals and potential indictments, investigations. They have plenty of reason to do this through whatever means they find, 25th Amendment impeachment or simple indictment, or they can declare the whole thing null and void. They will find a way, if they are forced to, by the same necessity that was posed on their regime in South Korea when the South Korean people took the streets, or the people in the Arab Spring took the streets and deposed regimes. And then from my perspective, all of this is part of preparing a situation through which people can go for and prepare for what would for a revolution. That's a different story, which I would like to get a chance to talk about later on. We have some thinking about how to prepare for that. But whatever future you're going for, if you feel in your heart, you understand that this Trump-Pence regime is going to be a disaster, not only for your own life, but most and your lives of people in this country, but for humanity, that you want to get out there now and work outside the channels of normal channels of political recourse in this country and get out into the streets and prepare for the time, hopefully soon, when we can get the tens of thousands to start in the streets and refusing to leave until this regime is gone.
You know,
that's what we're doing.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that you talk about and in your piece, and I think actually that you're alluding to now in terms of even this thing of that when people actually see that the political situation that is unfolding, there's a need to see the potential within it, because it's not always that obvious to people in a certain sense. And particularly, I mean, look, you have, you know, for whatever role the Democrats are playing in this, and you know, they are not playing a revolutionary role. That's certainly true. But it's actually, you know, you have people like, what's his name, Cory Booker.
Cory Booker.
Yeah, yeah. Who, you know, did this move and did, you know, and as really was reaching out to, you know, in a certain sense was, whether intentionally or not, reaching out to people about, you know, I'm not going to allow this to go down unspoken to. But there's also, at the same time, there's a need for people to go beyond that, even though with wide arms, but, you know, but really to actually take a look at, like, the potential that's actually unfolding right now and that may continue to sharpen up as we go along, and the need for actually, because we're talking about, in everything you've been saying, it's like it can't stay at the situation where it is now, where even 100 people coming out in the street, you know, here and there, 200 people, anything like that. It actually has to, you're looking at what has to develop up out of this, or what you'd like to see develop up out of this in terms of being able to really shake the hell out of this and to make a change that's really significant, is for that kind of the streets to be filled with people all over the country, you know, or in key cities around the country in a way that actually calls into question the actual legitimacy of the system as it's run now.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, first off, it does matter that there's hundreds of people get out behind this demand right now, and they have to be out there struggling with the people who are mainly seeing the way to change the situation is by trying to work for the elections. They have to get in there with people and talk about it and why that by itself is not going to change it. And people have different opinions about, is it part of the process of change, or why revolutionaries, why I don't think it actually, I think it actually diverts from that. But that is an important difference of opinion that we need to we need to engage and sharply engage, actually, because it really matters if there's going to be a future beyond the system we live under. But in terms of stopping and driving out the Trump-Pence regime, we can have that argument, but we can certainly make the argument that absent a profound political crisis that's created by nonviolent massive protests that don't stop, the actions of the Democrats will not be sufficient. The Democrats in power, I'm not talking about the people who are out there knocking on doors, okay? I'm talking about, you know, going door to door and putting lawn signs up. I'm talking about the people in the Democratic Party leadership. They will not take the actions you want them to take as resolutely as they need to be taken without this kind of protest. And two more things about that. One is, first off, millions of people have taken to the street. The Women's March has millions of people in it. But that, as Sarah Rourke, who's a correspondent and one of the main writers on refusefascism.org, has just put up a piece there, and I think it's on medium.com as well, that is not sufficient. And that she's put a very big call out to people, her compatriots, she's a former Hillary worker, to get involved in this. Because let's take a look at what Cory Booker did. Look, there's no point to me doubting whether his sincerity or what he was trying to do. And I don't even, whether he was grandstanding for 2020 or not. He spoke with some conviction about saying, I'm willing to be Spartacus here and risk censor and maybe even expulsion for the Senate by breaking the rules, whether or not he was or is a different dispute. But he stood up and did that. What happened off of that? Well, one thing that happened off of that is millions of people heard that. And then it's interesting, people in certain media stations, not on Fox News, but on other media stations, went and played the scenes from Spartacus, which people know this is a slave who the Roman authorities were looking for. And they said, is Spartacus here? And slave after slave stands up and says, I am Spartacus, I am Spartacus. So Cory Booker does this, but then off of this, millions of people see this film, and they also see him willing to risk something. But so Cory Booker made his stand there, but at the end of the day, we don't have the majority in Congress, so therefore this is going to go ahead. But what Cory Booker didn't call for is for a million people to take to the streets and surround the Capitol to prevent the nomination of Kavanaugh, which is what he was specifically protesting. Cory Booker himself didn't say, I'm going to walk out of Congress and not come back, and I have all my Democratic other Congress people, we're going to do the same, and this body is not going to function until this illegal, illegitimate, immoral president is gone. Why won't they do that? Because they won't call their people up into the streets and to mobilize their people the way that, frankly, the fascists and the right wing will do, because to do so would actually present front and center a whole host of issues, from the environment to the oppression of women to Black Lives Matter and to the situation of mass incarceration and murder by police, immigration, the fact that there's now 12,500 children in prison with their parents and in camps in the sweltering heat on the border. If they would mobilize their base, which is all that, if you will, use the word, the dispossessed and those who are politically more conscious of the action and desire equality, they won't call that into motion because where that struggle could go is something they don't think that they can control. But should we act in our own interests, and not just once a year, not just at the big protests and then go home and be told at the protests that elections are the only way to do that, our only hope is by getting the Democrats to serve our interests, which they will not and cannot because they're defending the system. We're not going to be able to take advantage of the kind of splits that do exist at the top, the kind of evidence that has been marshaled against Trump and Pence and their whole regime. That will go nowhere but sending people like Manafort to prison or some other kind of deal. And the wheels of this system and this fascist agenda rushing forward. So that's what I think we got to learn from Cory Booker. Left to its own devices, it's not gonna resolve anything. But as part of a larger process where the people are fighting in their own interests, that's what we had to do. Look, when people took to the streets, Michael, in the 60s to end the Vietnam War and fought ferociously around that, the Democratic Party was saying, to hell with you. We're going to nominate Hubert Humphrey. We're not doing that. Get out of here, But that struggle continuing eventually compelled even, of all people, Richard Nixon to see we've got to get out of this war. Our army's disintegrating, and we've lost the allegiance of our people, which is what Kissinger said in his memoir. So it's the people who have to step out of bounds, and then we'll see what these that will create the best conditions for politicians, for their own reasons and from their own interests, to act in ways that are consistent with, or at least in sync with, for a moment, the interests of the people. They will not act of their own accord in ways that you think you want them to act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's extremely important. Now, I want to have one more question, and then we're going to move to callers. But I wanted to actually, there's something, I think what you're saying is extremely important. And there's a point where you've talked to, in the piece that you did, you talk about the potential that's unfolding now, and that may continue to sharpen up, which you've actually, you know, been speaking to just recently. And you've talked about the need for millions in the streets that we just talked about, and that you see the, there's still, I think, the people need to look at, like, what is the actual political situation that's unfolding now and the potential within it? And I think that also ties in with, you know, because I want to make this point, too, which is the importance of Refuse Fascism and what it's doing itself, like in terms of joining with other people, but also as an organization and, the need for that to be actually out there and people supporting that. It's an important thing. And you know, there's a handful of things that are actually out there in the way that they need to be out there right now. And that's one of them. And I think there needs to be some people paying a lot of attention to that. But the actual political situation that we're facing right now, and as you've been speaking to, the potential that lies within it, because that's a critically important thing for people to understand.
Yeah, look, the potential lies in the fact that people feel very deeply what is happening and that it's unjust. Look, I think there's a tremendous amount of fear in this country that this guy could launch a nuclear war, that he's destroying the environment, that basic rights to abortion for people to come here and apply for asylum or immigrants to be able to live their lives, black people not to be shot down because they're shot down by the police. People are afraid that with this regime and this president that things are going to get far worse, including that he could eliminate the right to dissent, and they've already made major steps in that direction federally, but especially in state houses. Inspired by people are disgusted at a culture of lying, corruption, demeaning people, hatred, the bigotry. And it's outraged that, as I wrote, the narcissistic white supremacist, misogynist, Nazi pig is still in power. The fact that these very things are happening every day is the basis for people to take to the streets and create the kind of situation where people say, no, we're going to fight in our own interests. But people have been told that the way to fight is within the system itself and within the elections. And that's the only thing that's practical. This is not a new argument. This was told to the abolitionists in the 1850s. This was told to us in the 60s. It's always their answer, but it's not true. People can act on their own, and they have a lot of ways they try to bring people in. There's a lot of very dedicated, principled people who are out there right now, not getting behind who are trying to take over the Democratic Party, you know, the Democratic Socialist America. A lot of people following that is, right, we can take back the Democratic Party. Well, again, I will quote Bob Avakian. He said, look, if you try to make the Democrats what they are not, you will become more like what the Democrats actually are. And I put it this way, once you get in that, you know, when Alexandra gets elected into Congress, she is either going to become and play their game, or she's not going to be there very long, or she's going to be completely ineffectual, and her main social role will be to provide a safety valve. And this is what Obama said in his speech to the students at the University of Illinois. He said, you know, I'm not going to quote it exactly, and he says, when you elect somebody unexpected, then you feel a little bit of hope. In other words, we've roped you in here, but the rules of the game are the rules of the game. And that's why you see in Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez saying things like, my good friend and that American hero, or whatever she called John McCain, who was anybody who can take an objective view of history can recognize was a war criminal, even as at this moment he's very, or not at this moment, before he died, he was very concerned that what Trump was doing was going to undermine the U.S. position in the world, which he believed deeply had to be asserted under the cover of democratic ideals, even though he ultimately and almost always called for enforcing it with force. But that she knows how to play. She's learning how. She knows how, and she's learning how to play the game of America first, but under the umbrella of inclusion of a certain strata of people within this country. But if you want to actually uproot white supremacy, if you want to uproot U.S. militarism, if you want to actually solve the problems of the environment, you're not going to solve it by playing their game. You're only going to solve it by relying on the people themselves to act.
Mm-hmm. All right, Andy, we're going to take a short break. Then I want to play something, a couple of quotes from Bob Avakian, and then we'll come back to you and we'll have a whole pile of listeners who are calling in now and ask questions and discuss this with you. So you can stick around for a bit, right?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. All right. We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back. So stay tuned. Welcome back. That was Green Day with 99 Revolutions. All right. And right now, I want to go to those two speaking parts we have, right? We're just going to run them. It's something from Bob Avakian. I thought it would put a good frame on this, and then we'll be right back.
We are confronted by, we are now being ruled by a fascist regime. Calling this regime fascist is not an insult, but speaks to the terrible reality. There is a direct line from the Confederacy to the fascists of today, and a direct connection between their white supremacy, their open disgust and hatred for LGBT people as well as women, their willful rejection of science and the scientific method, their raw America First jingoism and trumpeting of the superiority of Western civilization, and their bellicose wielding of military power, including their expressed willingness and blatant threats to use nuclear weapons to destroy countries with the finger of a demented bully on the nuclear button. A regime that, without exaggeration, threatens not just greatly heightened suffering for the masses of humanity, but the very existence of humanity itself. Whether we consider ourselves revolutionaries, convinced of the need for a radical overturning of the system and thorough transformation of society, or we believe that it is possible to bring about changes that will lead to a more just society within this system, whether our understanding is that America is not and cannot be a force for good in the world, or we hope it still can become that, all of us need to come together and act together with the urgency that corresponds to the terrible present and the gravely imperiled future that this fascist regime represents for humanity, and with the conviction that something far better is necessary and possible. Thousands must be organized to take to the streets in cities all over the country, beginning on November 4, overcoming fear and feeling the strength of their common cause and action and their common aspiration and determination, making clear their resolve to not just make a statement, but to continue, and more than that, to spread and multiply their numbers and impact until millions have been mobilized and refuse to stop until the demand has been met. This nightmare must end. The Trump Pence regime must go.
All right, welcome back. And that was Bob Avakian, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party. And those were taken from his speech, from the Trump-Pence regime must go. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept the fascist America. A better world is possible. And you can find that at revcom.us, all right? And it's a very important speech to actually take a look at. It's a very important film to take a look at. All right, now we're going to jump into our conversation. And let's talk with Michael first. Michael, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. Can I ask you a question? I've been to a refuse fascist demonstration in L.A., and I'm curious, what is your end game? You get rid of Trump and Pence, then you get Ryan is the next in line. So what do you get? Do you want to change the whole system in getting rid of Trump and Pence? What's your end game?
Andy?
Michael, that's a good question.
Yeah.
Okay, so what comes next? In order to get rid of... No, I think it's an important question. Look, if we build the kind of movement... Now, just try to get outside the framework of what you've experienced in the last several decades, and where you actually do have tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people in the streets in Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York, Boston, different places, like we had with the Women's March, maybe not quite as many all the time, but where every day people are in their tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands in the streets. And this continues day after day. And this creates a crisis. And they find the means to declare their... However they decide to get rid of first Trump, then Pence, or in the case of Nixon and Agnew went first. And it wasn't the same kind of process as this, what we're calling for, but it was a process where they found stuff to get Agnew on some past stuff when he was governor of Maryland. He was gone. They put in a neutral character, Jerry Ford, and then Nixon was faced with a decision of impeachment or resignation, and people in his own party prevailed upon him to resign, and he did that. I don't know that Trump will do the same. But the point is this, Michael, that if you have the kind of political situation where the initiative, the political initiative, where what the big story is the people in the streets refusing to leave in what would be relatively unprecedented in recent American history, certainly not for 50 years has there been this kind of thing and never quite like this, that what will come next will be determined in that moment. I don't know how far people will be willing to struggle. I don't know what options they'll come up with. You know, they might come up with somebody, you know, a solution that is one that actually cools things out for a while, and everybody can sort of say, okay, well, this is better than what was, and we'll put this guy in power, and this is how we'll restore constitutional order. And then, from my perspective, the struggle will continue in different forms, or things could develop in some other kinds of ways. That future is actually unwritten. There's not a procedure. You can go look it up, you know, in the Federalist Papers or someplace else and say, well, here's what's going to happen. It's not going to go down like that. You know, the only remedies in the Constitution at this point are the 20th, explicitly, for removing a president is the 25th Amendment or the impeachment. But that's not what we're talking about. There's a lot of different ways this can go about. There's an op-ed in the Times today about why, from Stormy Daniels' lawyer, Avenatti, that he should be a grand jury should be convened, that he should be indicted. Well, if that's what happened and Trump is forced from power, then you still got Pence. Are people going to continue to struggle? The point is, what's missing from the political equation now is the people as a force who are fighting for their own interests. If you mobilize that, then you have a different political situation, and the people themselves will be raising different demands. Different sections of the people will have different programs for how to resolve this. There'll be different forces within the Democratic Party. The parties will split, probably, the Democratic Party, Republican. I don't know what's going to happen, but it is going to be a wild situation. But the question for people is, isn't that situation much more desirable than one where this Trump and Pence cabal, this alliance between these fascist
different fascist elements of, that have mainly coalesced in the Republican Party, but includes a whole big organized section of Christian fascists who have an entire movement that's been aiming for power for some time and counterintuitively have found their fit champion now in, you know, in Donald Trump. All of these forces are going to be in the field, and that's going to be a different ballgame if the people are aroused and politically demanding justice.
All right. How about let me go to line two with Rick, who has a question that's a very important question about how can we deal with repression?
Hello?
Rick,
hi. Is Rick going to get on?
Yeah. Rick, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just thinking about recent history. It sounds to me like with this big umbrella persistent resistance in the streets thing you guys are aiming at, it's kind of like trying to resurrect Occupy in a way. And you got to remember that thing was systematically shut down with military viciousness all over, you know, simultaneously across the country. When, you know, the minute you guys get some traction, there's going to be serious repercussions. And Spartacus was crucified along with all his buddies, and the Roman Empire didn't crumble until quite a while later.
Yes, that's true. And we do have to go into this with eyes wide open. Understanding, though, that when you have a regime, and we call it a regime, okay, you have a regime that now, you know, first takes families, takes children, separates them from the parents, puts them in prison by themselves, 3 years old, 1 year old, does that complete disregard for any of their humanity. When you have a regime that now has over 12,000 children in prison with their, many without their parents as they've been coming across the border in an extraordinary, outrageous situation, that there is repression now. You still have a situation where not only are a couple of people a day being killed, mostly Black and Latinos, by the police, but you have a presidency who's not even giving lip service to that this is unjust, but is actually saying, take the gloves off. You have this mass incarceration that he's not really even been able to fully get to implementing his program, his more genocidal approach to Black people as a whole, although we've seen that in what he said. So you have to look, and the threats. Look, this thing in North Korea and Iran, there's a danger of war. So you have to take a look at the situation that there is tremendously repressive things, or just women losing the right to birth control and abortion is going to cost thousands of lives. So will there be repression? Undoubtedly, there will be repression. How do we prepare for that? Well, right now, in preparing for this kind of struggle, we need to involve big teams of lawyers. If you know people, I think we have to have this discussion in the civil liberties organizations, National Lawyers Guild. We have to be preparing people to have the kind of support apparatus in miniature that you did see with Occupy, where there were health teams, legal teams, logistics teams. All of that will have to be developed in preparation for this and in the course of it. Now, but what about this repression? Well, one thing you have to do is you have to unite everybody. Every person who is attacked, including people who are attacked right now, people do not come to the defense of people the way they need to, whether it's the people who are at Standing Rock or Patricia, who scaled the Statue of Liberty last week. Every time they make a move against us or repress one of the people who are courageous resistors, a big, big fight has to go on in society. I'll tell you right now, Refuse Fascism and the Revolution Club in Los Angeles is facing indictments that are unbelievably outrageous in terms of being singled out in ways for what should be and actually is legally protected speech. There has to be a big movement in L.A. to stop this, not whether you agree with Refuse Fascism or the Revolution Club in all of their policies, to understand that every act of repression by this government has to be reason for 100 more people to stand up. There, you know, people were killed in the 1960s. We understand this is a serious business here. Fascism is, look, the normal workings of U.S. imperialism is serious business for the oppressed people of the world, including within this country. But under fascism, it's the same game, but on qualitatively worse, and potentially outlawing the right to dissent. you want to be fighting now. And yes, there will be losses that are taken, but every loss has to be one in which we build the struggle. And frankly, during Occupy, there were people saying this is an idea that's too big to fail. They were all kinds of silliness was going on. I know I tried to organize and was involved with people here in trying to build a mass movement against the repression of Occupy, but people didn't want to do that for, frankly, sectarian reasons and were prepared and said, well, we'll just go and we'll form smaller Occupy this, Occupy that. But as we see, that has ended up being dwindling away. What we need to do is be prepared for this repression and use the repression as yet a way to bring even more people into the struggle.
All right. I want to thank Rick for his question, and we're going to move to our next callers in just a minute.
But first, I wanted to mention the soon-to-be-released film of Babavakian's speech, Why We Need an Actual Revolution and How We Can Really Make Revolution. Now, this summer, in several cities, Avakian gave a two-part speech on which we can build a movement to change everything. There has never been a speech like this on this topic before. Take my word for it. Now, preview showings in a number of cities are scheduled for the weekend of September 22nd. However, if you're not in a place where there is a scheduled preview showing and you want to organize one, write to revolution.reports@yahoo.com. That's revolution.reports@yahoo.com. And all the information on the release of the film and how you can see it is available at revcom.us. Once again, that's revcom.us, R-E-V as in Victor, C-O-M.us. And will also be posted on my Facebook page and Twitter.
Michael, I do want to say that a big question that has been before humanity, and certainly before the people in this country since the 60s at least, is could you actually make a revolution in a country like this? And because that seems to be so daunting, people have asked the question and mainly acted on the fact that, well, maybe we don't really need a revolution. So this talk is really an unprecedented talk where he asks the question of why is it that only a revolution can solve the problems that we're facing in this country and in the world. And then, having made that case, he goes on in the part two of this film to show and to bring forth a strategy for an actual revolution, which can only be made under certain circumstances, which he goes into, and how it could be made, and then what we need to do today to prepare for that. This is one of the biggest questions that has befuddled and tormented people who want radical change for generations. And this time, there's an answer and a framework to do that. And I think people should really want to see this movie, if only to hear that there's an answer to that, and even more, to get involved in that process of preparing the ground today for the kind of struggle that ultimately could free all of humanity.
All right. Very good point. Let's move on to Nick. And Nick he wants to talk about Christians. He says Pence et al. Are not real Christians, and he'd like to talk to you about that. Nick, welcome to the show.
Hey, brother. Well, you know, I've always gotten on like a thorn in my side when I hear Christians spoken of as, you know, fascist Christians or whatever. Christians have to follow, if I can get on my soapbox a minute, the precepts of Christ. Like the number one in our preaching, our ministry, you got to forgive your enemy. You want to be a Christian? Call yourself a Christian, you got to step up. That's why we don't need a revolution except for each and every individual. Saying absolutely no hurt to any living thing, actually. But start with forgive your enemy. And everybody should be doing that.
Okay, Nick, we got your question. So let's let Andy speak to that because we're running out of time and I have a couple more people that are on.
Very quickly, Nick and millions of other people, if you're Christian principles or your Jewish principles or your Muslim principles or your whatever religion you believe in, Buddhism, are leading you to fight and to stand up against injustice, to fight for justice, to stand with the oppressed people, then you should be standing with us just as we will be spreading our convictions as to what would ultimately solve the problems of humanity and the oppressed people and bring about a better world. So should you from your own perspective and what you take in your case from the teachings of Jesus. That said, there is a particular strain of Christianity, of fundamentalist Christianity in this country that is very closely tied in with white supremacy, as Avakian has pointed out. It's not just a coincidence that the Bible Belt is also the lynching belt, because there's been a strain of Christianity that has used this same religion to enforce relations of oppression, particularly of black people, but also of women and people of other gender, and continues to do that. If you would go to revcom.us and listen to the talk we mentioned before, The Trump-Pence Regime Must Go, Avakian goes into and quotes some of the people who are part of that strain of Christian fundamentalism, of which Mike Pence is a representative. It's a particular political form of Christianity and how they have come to power. He's also published a book, Away With All Gods. He's then written a paper on the right-wing conspiracy, and why the Democrats are no answer. It's about the impeachment proceedings against Bill Clinton that goes deeply into this. It's more than we have time for. But there is that strain of it. But if your religious convictions are leading you to fight against injustice, we should be standing together. And then we should argue about whether the answer ultimately lies in following the teachings of Jesus or understanding the world as it actually is and not things that don't exist. But that's an argument that we're going to have as we stand shoulder to shoulder against all the injustices that exist.
All right. Let me see. We're going to talk to Jim, who wants to talk about fascism, is already here. But I also, Andy, there's another one because we're running out of time. There's another caller who gave us a call and said he'd also like us to not forget that the Trump regime's crimes against Gaza should be on our list. And it is important in relation to this kind of the broader sort of savaging of the world that this regime is doing. But Jim has a question about fascism already being here. Jim, welcome to the show.
How you doing? Hi. I just want to say presidents are just spokesmen. So what we should be concerned with is why do they have such a horrible spokesman right now? You know, because it's a definite sign that they're taking us somewhere not good. They just erected a statue of the Baphomet in front of the Capitol building in Sacramento, a big black, creepy-looking statue. So that's a symbol that fascism is here, because, of course, they're not Christians. Those guys are Satanists. Come on. You know, it's all about the occult to those guys. They follow different types of precepts than the normal people. Mm-hmm. They're the elite ruling class, you know?
All right, Jim, so we should get Andy a chance to speak to that, because we are running out of time. Andy, go ahead.
Well, I could hear something about a statue was in there. I don't know. Michael, what did he say on the
That statue in Sacramento was actually it's a dark statue, and it was actually an indication of the rise of fascism. The fascism is already here. His question was, look, fascism is already here. How do you deal with that?
Okay. Well, look, the fascist strain in America goes, if you will, back to its foundation. But certainly it is a strain that has a history that rises and ebbs and flows, but that it's actually a strain within America from its, you know, it's become particularly virulent and organized and into the Republican Party over the last 30 or 40 years. Is America a white supremacist country? Yes. Does it enforce white supremacy? Yes. Is it a patriarchal society? Yes. Does it enforce that? Yes, it does. Does it pursue the policies of empire? Does it exploit people here and around the world? All of that is true, and all of which has fascistic elements within it. But fascism is a particular form of rule of this system. It is not. It is one where essentially democratic rights, civil liberties are gone, where it's the rule of open, naked, unapologized for dictatorship in the interests of the ruling class. It's always a dictatorship, but it happens through the normal functions, through bourgeois democratic norms, competition among people who want to represent for this system. And the people have some latitude within that as long as they go along with the system, or as long as you're not one of the classes of people, castes of people who this system depends on downpressing, black people, Latino people, different minorities, and that shifts and changes. There's a qualitative difference when fascism becomes the form of rule. It's still the same system, and it's not any place we want to go, including for those of us who want to get rid of the whole system and all of its fascistic elements need to recognize. And so if you want a better world, you need to struggle against what's concentrated in the Trump-Pence regime.
All right, Andy, we have
one question of Gaza. Just one thing. Yes, Gaza is part of their the whole program of empire that is now. It was bad enough and pretty bad under Obama, but this is now with the moving of the the U.S. embassy, the policies of the Trump-Pence regime, including this Kushner and their, you know, promoting Netanyahu and all this, is does very much have to be part of our movement. That these are things that are heading towards and towards war. You have to look at Israel, Yemen, Syria, and all this targeting of Iran as part of a package of what they're doing there.
All right, Andy, real quick, we're going to have to, I just really want to get this one last question. It's from Freddie. He has a question of impeachment. Freddie, we won't have really a lot of time to have you on, but I wanted Andy to get a chance to speak to that question. You raised the question of impeachment. So, Andy, go ahead.
Yes, like I said, a quick comment. The reason why we should continue with the idea of impeachment, because it sets precedents for future regimes that it's going to be done recently and it will get done.
All right. Thank you very much, man. Now, Andy, you want to speak to that real quick? You have about 2 minutes.
The only way you get an impeachment and removal of office, remember that impeachment is just one step. He has to be then convicted in the Senate. In order for this whole thing to happen, you have to have the people fighting for their own interests in the streets. That's why, sure, people will be fighting for impeachment. There's other people who are raising issues of the 25th Amendment. People are raising all kinds of things. But the problem is, if you're just focused on trying to meet the requirements of what have been laid out as the procedures, and then you're by definition, you're relying on the people who can actually do that, which is Congress and elected representatives, you're not going to get what you want. You actually have to have this groundswell from below, this demand from below, and then things can happen in a way that will not happen absent that.
Mm-hmm. All right, Andy, I want to thank you very much for joining us today, and I'm sure we'll have you back on the show sooner than you think. All right, so thank you very much for joining us
today. Thank you, Michael, and thank you, audience.
All right, thanks a lot, man. Take care. Talk to you again soon. All right, we've got some time left, so I thought I'd play another clip, which will amplify a comment that Andy made about the irony of the Christian fascists lining up to support Trump. It's also especially relevant this week as a certified Christian fascist, Kavanaugh, may be taking a place on the Supreme Court. This is the unholy alliance between Trump and fundamentalist Christian fascists, and it's also taken from the film The Trump-Pence Regime Must Go. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. A better world is possible.
One of the most distinguishing and significant features of this particularly American version of fascism is the unholy alliance between Trump and fundamentalist Christian fascists. As I pointed out in another recent talk, Trump, I think it's fair to say, could not have won the election if the Christian fascists not only had opposed him, but if they'd been unenthusiastic about him. And even when the pussy-grabbing thing came out, they didn't turn against him, Jerry Falwell Jr. and all these others, because they recognized, here is somebody who is going outside of the whole rules and the way things are done in the swamp of Washington, who will actually carry through on this stuff, like outlawing abortion and suppressing gay people. And Trump, for his part, recognized that if he didn't get this force behind him, he was not going to be able to do it. Pence is obviously a critical linchpin in this uniting of what's represented by Trump and the Christian fascists. The regular bourgeois institutions like CNN, the Democratic Party, and so on, they keep saying, he can't do that. That's not the way things are done. But then Trump does it because he's not playing by those rules. He's not working within the norms as they've been. He is going directly up against them, precisely as an important part of what he's doing. And while Pence plays a very important role in all this, he is far from the only Christian fascist in this regime. Besides the appointment of Neil Gorsuch, who is himself a Christian fascist, to the Supreme Court, reestablishing, after the death of Antonin Scalia, the right-wing majority on the court, Trump's cabinet is full of these Christian fascists.
All right, you've been listening to The Michael Slate Show, and I'm your host and producer, Michael Slate. And I want to thank everybody who called in today, everybody who has been supportive of the show. I want to thank my assistant producer, Henry Carson, production assistant, Jeff Pryor, my engineer, Gary Baca, and all of the callers, all right, and everybody else. And we're going to go out now with Voice of Revolution from Savage Rose. Talk to you again next week.
A thousand years.